Max Ash number 17747, reel 30.
So we were in the Naples area and waiting to move south. I presume we must have had the idea already, even if we hadn't been told, that we would be going to Egypt.
You hadn't been to Egypt before, had you?
No. I'd been in North Africa, but on the, you know, Algeria, Tunisia side. Up on the Tuesday, the 14th of March, rush round getting RHQ ready for a long move. Ian Tophill, who was by this time the adjutant and the CO, go out. And I, whilst they're away, I managed to get stuck into the mess accounts in the flat we're living in. I can't remember where this was exactly, whether it was certainly in the Naples area. But the following night, we heard an air raid on Naples, a German air raid on Naples. We were up at 4:30 and had a very cold drive through Naples and out the other side. Seeing, and this was a very interesting minor piece of history, seeing Vesuvius erupting. That was the big eruption of March 1944, I think the biggest since AD 79, or certainly one of the biggest. And it did give out lava, and villages were destroyed in 1944. We went through little villages and small towns that we had seen on our initial breakout from Salerno. For example, a place called Nola, N-O-L-A, where I think I noted some months ago in the diary that we had all taken to a small girl called Rosa, a 10-year-old who had chocolate from all quarters, charming little child. Anyway, we went through Nola and then through Avellino, which we had not seen before, and then over the Apennines.
Were these villages showing signs of revival when you went
through
the second
time? Oh, yes, very
much
so. Yes. This was, what, nearly 6 months after we had seen them being fought over, and the revival was considerable. I don't mean rebuilding, but people around looking more relaxed, doing work.
What sort of work?
In the fields, very largely.
This would be getting up to sowing time, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Indeed, it was well into sowing time in that part of Italy.
Ah, yes. It's further south, it
yes,
would be.
That's right. We were delighted that you ask about that. So in addition to finding new life in these places, we came across clean villages untouched by war, which brings back the history of what had happened. I mean, we had had all this fierce fighting at Salerno and breaking out of it, whereas the 8th Army had had a fairly clean run up from Taranto and places like that where they had landed. They'd gone up fairly quickly. Most of the countryside had not been touched by the war.
They'd bypassed the fighting, hadn't they?
Yes, that's right. Just as Anzio had drawn off German divisions, so earlier than that did Salerno draw off most of the German defences. They let the 8th Army come quite easily up the east coast, up to a point. I'm not suggesting they had it all their own way, but the resistance was negligible as long as the Salerno bridgehead was there to draw off the German troops. So we had our first sight, really our first sight, of clean villages untouched by war. Everywhere else we'd been since Salerno had been fought over, the whole lot. And these villages were a joy to see.
What were the roads like going over the Apennines?
Oh, pretty grim, pretty grim at any time here, but in those days, I mean, they were rutted. They were stony lanes or muddy lanes. driving must have been hell for the vehicles. And my goodness, 16th of March, Thursday, wake up in a village, I haven't named it, to find snow all round and an icy cold wind. Continue our journey across wide open plains. Now, this is in that flat area we talked about, Fodger.
The cluster of airfields.
That's right.
Did you see any aircraft in the area?
No, I don't remember seeing any. But then we didn't actually go through. I don't remember seeing an airfield as such.
You were on your way to...
We were on our way to... Altamura, yes. Journey across wide open plains, together with the snow lying on them, these give a sense of space and freedom, openness, which we haven't seen for 6 months, with all the semi-mountainous or thickly populated coastal areas on the west were congested by comparison with these steppes of the area towards Fodger, Bari. And having been accustomed to growing up in Lincolnshire with a certain amount of flatness, this all seemed homely to me compared with the mountains. We arrived at a stone-hutted POW camp near Altamura with rumours that we might be going to North Africa.
Were those well received?
Oh yes, I think so. North Africa was no longer a war zone. And we're living in, exclamation mark, in what was a prisoner of war camp.
There's been a German or Italian POW camp or one?
It would be both, I would have guessed. I mean, where the Italians had established any sort of camp, the Germans took it over and used it to house our prisoners they took in North Africa. And I was not best pleased to be given the hideous job of regimental mess secretary, to add to the assistant adjutant function. In 3 hours from scratch, had to form a mess, starting with no tables, cookers or cooks. Nearly driven mad getting all this stuff together, but the CO seemed pleased with the result. Icy cold.
Where did you recruit your cooks from?
Oh, we had cooks. I say we had them. I mean, they were recruited from presumably the people who had been the catering staff in RHQ. But you raise a valid point there, because we probably by this time were able to browbeat or bribe some local Italians to help out with cooking.
I understand it. Most of the time you were deployed in the field, you were feeding yourself and either eating your rations cold or warming up the tins yourself.
That's right, exactly. Mm. Exactly. That's right. And this was getting back into some sort of beginnings of some sort of settled mess condition. There are so many questions it's impossible to answer through lack of memory or knowledge, but I don't know what, for example, our bombardier and his two cooks, the catering staff at RHQ, had been doing in the Anzio bridgehead. Presumably they had been given general duties as well as helping out with rations. There was very little they could do to be employed on their normal job of catering in the conditions we had been living in.
Could they have been employed as gun numbers?
They wouldn't have been gun numbers because they were in RHQ. I mean, they could have been in theory, in extremis, but they were more likely to have been given jobs of helping out.
General administration?
Yes, general administration.
Fetching and carrying and that sort of thing?
Yes, that's right.
Had the regiment had a lot of casualties while in the bridgehead at Antwerp?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, I can't remember the numbers, but it's in this regimental history here.
So you've been you were reduced when you got to.
Yes, but not reduced in the same way as a heavily engaged infantry company would have been reduced. We're talking about a handful of of deaths and a slightly bigger handful of wounded carted off, and these would not not be enough to damage the credibility of the regiments as a fighting unit, or still less as a garrison unit, which we were on our way to, in effect, to being.
Had you received your replacements by the time you'd moved across Italy through Foggia, or were you?
I think they were tending to arrive in bits and pieces all the time. We were never left short-staffed for very long. Obviously, in Anzio conditions, there would be shortages. When the 444 battery headquarters had been destroyed, it would have taken a little while to reman it.
So your replacements arrived in a trickle, not in
yes.
a block?
Yes, indeed, they came in a trickle. A block would not have been relevant anyway, because they tended to be rather bitty needs, you know, two more gunners needed in F battery or whatever, and a survey assistant needed in RHQ because Terry's gone to hospital with a fever, that sort of thing.
Have you any idea whether there was a standard time between logging a casualty and a requirement for a replacement and receiving a replacement?
No, I can't remember any standard time. Sometimes it certainly happened very quickly. But I guess that the flow through of reinforcements was itself, you know, subject to things back down the line in terms of transport and availability. I mean, I myself was a reinforcement at Salerno. Whether I was received by the regiment there as early as they expected, I don't know. But that, of course, was a dire situation in which we had a whole boatload of reinforcements of one sort or another to replace a lot of casualties. I would guess that replacing casualties was less organised.
What did you do with yourselves while you were in the POW camp, or former POW camp?
What did we do? Now, we argued, we talked. I put up a lot of maps in the office as intelligence for anybody who cared to pop in and see what was happening both on the global war front. Presumably I must have got this stuff from brigade or divisional headquarters. Had a look round my RHQ troop. We were all sort of emerging from a daze of battle and messy travel, and we were in one place with some buildings which were ours, however poor and however temporary. And one of the things I have noted here was I went in a truck with Bombardier Harvey. Now, presumably, he being the catering bombardier, we would be vaguely on, or more specifically, on the lookout for food, things like eggs, you see, which fresh eggs, which were not part of the army ration. To look at Matera, you may have or may not have heard of that, but it's a place where there were, until very recently, people living in caves. The cave dwellings of Matera were a sight to behold, and a whole mountainside of caves with people living in them, rather like the settlements in of some of the North American tribes in the Yosemite Valley. And area around the Grand Canyon, not to mention places in the Middle East. Stroll into an ancient church in time for a beautiful Ave Maria, then given drink and nuts in a peasant house. People were very friendly, except surprised to find a horse in the house. It was that kind of thing. You see, if we were billeted in the house, we were as likely as not sharing a room with fenced-off pigs at one end and with rats crawling visibly across the rafters above us. It was a pretty primitive sort of society in many ways.
Would this mean that people and animals habitually shared rooms in the house.
Yes,
would
there be
parts
would.
Of the house set aside for the animals?
Yes, that's right. As you still find, of course, in parts of Austria, Switzerland, where part of the house, the building is allocated to the animals in the winter, as well as the family. But whether this was for the same reasons, and obviously that is because of the bitterness of the weather and the need to protect the herds. This, I think, was probably more from fear of somebody nicking the creatures.
Precaution against theft.
That's yes. right.
Were you able to speak Italian by this time?
Oh, we were all into bits of colloquial Italian, inevitably. Not much. Never has been much since, but just enough to get by on holidays, and at that time to get by on visits to procurement visits for eggs or whatever. And Sunday the 19th, the next day, I miss a huge regimental parade by taking a party to mass in Altamura. And I noted here, I have no idea what this means, there were fights in the church. Amusing, I put. They were not fights involving my troops.
So fights amongst the locals?
Yes, yes, I don't know why. Come across a road accident and take a civilian to the ospedale, hospital. Go to Gravina, get free samples of all drinks, and return to the regiment with two or three other subalterns. Return almost tight. Hear that the vehicles and guns are to be inspected by Remy tomorrow before we hand them in. Hand them in, that's interesting. We'd only taken them over about a week or two before from 5th Division.
Do you remember what condition they were in when you took them out?
I don't. No, I don't.
I mean, you referred to the office truck as being horrible.
Yes.
May simply have been.
I think that was just its layout inside, rather than dirt or anything.
Presumably, vehicles would need to be replaced or reconditioned quite frequently because of the difficult and hard conditions in which you're operating them.
That's right, that's right. But, of course, this brings to mind the condition of the guns in particular. Some of these guns, I reckon, had fired before we get much further in this account. They'd fired about 250,000 rounds each, far beyond the normal span at which they would have been, had their barrels replaced or something of that kind. And later on, we shall come to incidents in which guns actually, you know, shells exploded in the barrel because the barrels were distorted or weak.
And were you able to carry out checks on the guns while you were in the field and maintenance tasks?
Well, we had, there was a warrant officer, Remy warrant officer, either attached to the regiment, I think he was actually, who was responsible for doing these checks as far as they could be done. We were able to get help from Remy very readily throughout. I don't remember there being in the Anzio bridgehead, though no doubt they were. But it is extraordinary in retrospect that so few vehicles ended up simply having to be left because they couldn't be started or moved. Things were moved, things were not abandoned, they were made to work. And Remy played a fair part in this. Well, quite a lot was done by ingenuity within the batteries, but Remy were always there on call. As to the guns, I think it was more difficult to do accurate checks on the guns without real, you know, workshop equipment, which was not transportable to the field where the guns were. So I don't know quite what to make of this Remy thing. I suppose they wanted, we were obviously going to leave all this stuff in Italy. It wouldn't be carted back to Egypt just for the sake of the voyage. Somebody needed to know what sort of condition it was in. Hence, I would guess, the Remy inspection, yes, to be inspected before we hand them in. I've noted that eggs were plentiful in this part of Italy, though at ninepence each, which must have seemed an awful lot of money in those days. And vino is abundant. The next day, I've noted, and something I should have noted before but haven't bothered to, is that I spent quite a lot of time censoring troops' mail. All letters had to be censored by officers before being posted, which was, to some extent, an embarrassing job. I don't think anybody particularly liked doing it.
Was this for just RHQ personnel?
It's all I would do. You do your own troop, yes. Yeah.
Did they write home often?
Well, yes. I think I'm trying to. I'm hesitant because I think there was a ration, you see, of the airmail letter cards which you used. These folding. Did you know what they were like?
Aerograms.
Aerograms. That's right. There was a ration of those, which went free. I don't think it was easy to send stuff other than like that. Like, what I can't remember is whether people who were inveterate letter writers could buy more of these at a small cost. I rather think perhaps they could, because obviously some people were more assiduous writers than others. Work on these hideous mess accounts.
They seem to have been preoccupying you rather.
Well, they were. Stage. I wasn't used to being a mess secretary, and it's you know, it's the point at which the worst side of the civil service hits the military, wherever any accounting or particularly petty cash is concerned. Petty cash takes up a great deal more time than major money. Is always so, and I've noticed this throughout life in the public service. The worry is about the sixpences, not about the 6 millions. So, yes, it was rather worrying, because you've got to get the jolly things right.
Who was acting as your auditor then, when you were having to tot up the figures and
goodness
present
knows.
Accounts?
I should think it would be the my friend, the adjutant. Although I have a vague memory that the CO used to initial the accounts. I think he was probably, in fact, the accounting officer, insofar as there was one, just as a permanent secretary is the accounting officer in the government department.
What were you actually recording sales of?
I'd be recording the receipt of money from members of the mess and the way in which this was spent on eggs and wine and whatever.
So you were dealing with mess subscriptions?
Yes, that's right. Subscriptions to the mess. And
outgoings.
What I can't remember is whether I was... Now, I don't think I would be dealing with any government allocation of money for mess purposes, because that would be built into the quartermaster function.
He would supply you with rations, wouldn't
yes,
he?
That's right. And this was, in essence, what this was about, was supplementing rations for ambitiously greedy young officers who were hungry and wanted something better than the army rations.
So this is an extra charge for delicacies like eggs and whatever else you could get
that's
your hands
that's
on.
That's right.
What about drink? Did officers sign chits for drinks, or did they pay for them in cash?
Good question. No treating was the obvious thing all the way through. You paid for your own drink or you didn't have it. I think that we did, in fact, have a system of paying in the mess for drinks consumed at a particular meal. And if you wanted a bottle of wine, you paid for it. It may have, whether the cash was actually handed over that evening, I doubt. I think it would become a charge on the officer concerned. That would be his mess bill. I remember noting that I received mess bills from time to time, and they were quite literally that. So hence all this need for accounting to make sure that you chased Captain so-and-so to get his drinks paid for.
Another difficult question in dealing with this would be the question of the unit of account, whether you were using English money or
This was all in Italian. It was all in lira. 400 lira to the pound, and at that time, it's now about 2,400.
This would be the Allied military government.
It's all in Amgot money. Yes, that's right.
Did you have anything to do with Amgot? Because at this time you were in a rear area, weren't you?
Yes, we were. Yes, that's right. Don't remember having anything physically to do with them. We were conscious that we were under Allied military government. I mean, we were in an area in which the civilians were under Allied military government. It was no longer... It was a civilianised arrangement that we were now living under. We were conscious of there being people like town majors who would be literally majors from the British Army or the American Army, who were in effect the mayors of these towns for practical purposes, or working very closely with the mayors. There was a whole civilian administration laid on by the Allies, which was totally new and alien to those of us who'd simply been fighting.
When you were you paid in notes, or did you have money credited to some sort of note?
Oh, all of our money was, as gunner officers, was credited to Cox and Kings, to our accounts in wherever it is, somewhere just off Piccadilly. And we could find out, I can't remember exactly how our accounts stood, and I think at this time I was getting about £4 a week as a lieutenant.
Presumably you could draw.
And you could draw, yes. That's right. The field cashier was in the business of being able to pay you out money chargeable to your account in London.
What level was he? You mentioned meeting one of those at HQ 1st Division in the Anzio Bridgehead. I mean, was
so
there
I did,
one at
yes,
lower,
right.
lower level?
They tended to be, if I remember rightly, captains. They were really bank officials who'd been called up.
But I mean,
put
were
into
they,
the pay corps.
Was there one in the regiment, or did you have to go to division or to
brigade? They tended to be... mobile. I mean, they would come round. You would know that there was a field cashier coming round next Tuesday afternoon between 3 and 4. It's that kind of arrangement. Or there could be a pay office, which, if you could get there, would deliver the goods.
What about the soldiers? Did you have to have pay parades for them and put money on the bank?
There must have been. We didn't. Obviously, we didn't have pay parades as such in places like the Anzio Bridgehead, but.
Once
it was the same sort of arrangement that, I mean, they didn't have to draw the money if there was no need, if there was no reason for wanting it or spending it. I can't remember whether they simply drew as we did in the ranks what they felt they needed, as opposed to being paid money which, goodness knows, some of them might not have wanted at all. There's no point in having loads of cash in their battle dress pockets. And I don't think they did. I think it was drawn on as they needed.
Well, if you were, presumably if you were deployed or in action, then there'd be absolutely no reason
to
have
at all.
Money.
No way of spending it. That's right.
Would anybody
Whereas when we got back to Egypt, of course, it was a civilian sort of agenda.
Do you remember how long you stayed in the POW camp?
Well, we got there on Thursday the 16th of March. We moved out on Friday the 24th.
So you've been 8 days.
So we've been 8 days, that's right. And the latter part of that 8 days, we were preparing everything for the move. See to returns of RHQ equipment. Presumably this is the paperwork to do with handing over the leaving behind, with whom, I'm not sure, all the equipment. Who would normally take delivery of this stuff?
Well, it would
I
be Service
think.
Corps, wouldn't
it?
Would
be Service
G10,
Corps,
98
yeah.
stores and
yes,
so on.
I see. Oh, well, you... a great deal more about this than I do.
Well, only surmise.
Yes, I think you're knowledge. Probably. I think you're probably right.
Were you the only unit in this camp, or were there other?
Well, the division must have been spread around. Oh, yes. And 56th Division as a whole was being withdrawn. Get a day leave party off. You asked for how people occupied the troops. Well, this was a day leave party. Now, where they went, I don't know, but this was part of the recreational thing to get people. They probably went off to Bari or something like that, some nearby town. I drive a jeep recklessly and hit a lorry, but no damage.
To the lorry or the jeep?
It says all okay. Presumably both of them were unscathed.